This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, August 10th, 2021. Today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenkamp, Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. One of the more fascinating races that's going to develop down the stretch, the race for the second wild card in the National League. And the Reds have been making up a lot of ground on the San Diego Padres in the standings over the last few weeks. Well, on Monday night, the Reds had a tough day against the Cleveland Indians.
Now the 1-1. Swung on, and there's a high fly ball deep right field. If it's fair, it should go. Home run, Jose! A two-run bomb, and the route is on now.
It was a complete blowout against Luis Castillo, who's been so great since June 1st. Had a rough night last night. Cleveland wins 9-3. That sound from WTAM 1100. Meanwhile, the Padres took care of business against the Marlins with help from Eric Hosmer.
Line to left, and that's in for a base hit. From third comes Machado, and the Padres have a 5-3 lead. Eric Hosmer driving in another run.
Yeah, they would go on and win, and by the end of the night, the Reds 3.5 games behind the Padres in the race for that second wild card spot in the National League. But the Yankees, the hits just keep on coming. We already know their injured list. Their COVID list includes names like Garrett Cole and Jordan Montgomery and Anthony Rizzo and Gary Sanchez and Aroldis Chapman. Well, before their game on Monday, they placed Gleyber Torres on the injured list with a thumb injury, and they expect that he's going to miss about 10 to 20 days. Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, spoke positively about this and said it was actually, you know, good news considering the range of possibilities with that thumb injury. They faced the Kansas City Royals, and they were playing in extra innings after Jameson Taillon pitched great in the first seven innings. In the 11th inning, DJ LeMahieu broke a tie.
LeMahieu drives that to right center field. That will get down and go to the wall. Gallo will score. LeMahieu stops at second with an RBI double. And the Yankees have taken the lead once again. It's a 6-5 game.
And they would hold on and win that game. That was Ryan Rucco on the YES Network. The White Sox facing the Twins. And what was incredible to me about this game, which was on ESPN television last night, was the fact that it started out almost identically to how the White Sox game against the Cubs on Sunday night started out. If you remember, on Sunday night, Tim Anderson led off the game with a home run, and then three batters later, Eloy Jimenez hit a two-run homer. Well, here's what Tim Anderson did in the first inning.
Here's the pitch. This ball hit in the air, deep to left, back toward the wall. It's gone! He just got it over that wall in left. He's got another leadoff home run, and it's 1-0, one batter in.
The great Len Casper, ESPN 1000. Three batters later, Eloy Jimenez came to the plate with a runner on first.
High towering fly deep to center. That baby's gone off the sweet above the batter's eye. Well over 400 feet. A two-run shot. It's 3-0.
Yeah, it was estimated 454 feet. Jimenez was not done. He came to the plate again in the second inning with two runners on base.
1-0 pitch. Hit in the air to left. In the corner. That ball is gone. It's a three-run home. Oh, baby. Big baby. Keeps on hitting homers. He's got four in the last 24 hours.
The final score there, 10-1 White Sox over the Minnesota Twins. The Colorado Rockies put out a statement on Monday saying a fan was yelling the name of team mascot Dinger and not a racial slur during Sunday's game at Coors Field. The African-American player who was batting at the time isn't so sure. Miami Marlins outfielder Lewis Brinson said he didn't hear the fans shouting during the game, but a day later he reviewed the tape and had a different opinion. We're going to hear that later in the podcast and talk about it with Jessica Mendoza. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com,
or just stop by.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
0096.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter and producer for MLB.com. It's Sarah. We could talk about the Yankees, but we talk about the Yankees a lot, okay? We know that they've had another injury, and we both know that they're going to have to, if they're actually going to make the playoffs, have to withstand all these injuries. I want to talk about the White Sox, okay? Because I feel like after being around the White Sox the last couple of days, first off, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I am great. You know, we had a short night last night, not a lot of games, so feeling extra refreshed.
So with that in mind, the White Sox I saw on Sunday night and, you know, had conversations with a lot of the players over the weekend with Tony La Russa. And you're looking at that team and you're like, wow, you know, every we get to August, September every year and we're talking about fragmented teams and which teams can overcome injuries. And the Yankees certainly fit that bill. The Mets, even the Dodgers, the Padres. And it feels like right now, like the White Sox are actually coming together. Like they are, you know, a really good team that's running away with the American League Central. And they're only just now putting together the complete team, you know, that Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn and Jerry Reinsdorf envisioned during the course of the offseason with Eloy Jimenez, Luis Robert returning their lineup with Craig Kimbrell in their bullpen. Their rotation's absolutely rolling. Like I walked away from seeing them like, yeah, that team is really dangerous and coming together at exactly the right time.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, first of all, they're one of the most fun teams in baseball. I think it's them and the Blue Jays. The Padres, when Tatis is healthy, maybe they're up there as well. But you're 100% right. I mean, I remember when Eloy Jimenez got hurt, of course, in spring training, and then when Luis Robert got hurt in early May, we were thinking, okay, hopefully they can tread water. The division's not that good. They'll probably be in first place. And if they get these guys back in September, it might really help them in the postseason. And instead, they're one of the best teams in baseball and just getting so much stronger. And Eloy Jimenez has looked so good, especially in the last few days. But, you know, since returning, all of those home runs he's already hit. Luis Robert, I mean, we saw the speed on the base pass. He made a couple nice catches last night. He's going to be really good once he fully gets going. And I was so excited to see them on Sunday Night Baseball these last few weekends. And it's awesome to hear that you were taking away exactly what I'm seeing when I sit here and watch those games, because this is a powerhouse team. And I don't think they're getting treated like it across the board. And I know they don't hit a lot of home runs, which is probably in part because Robert and Jimenez have been hurt, but they're still third in the majors in weighted runs created plus of all teams. Their pitching is top three among starters. The bullpen's really good. I mean, they have everything. When you talk about what a team needs to add or what a team needs to do, they don't necessarily, because they already have all of those things going for them.
And by the way, they're not completely whole, because of course, Yasmani Grandal has been out with a knee injury. When we talked to Tony La Russa the other day, and by the way, this is the day after I saw Grandal running the bases on Saturday. You know, maybe not full speed. You know, maybe not. He's not going to be activated today. But La Russa kind of gave us a little grin, like I think that he's coming back, you know, sooner rather than later. So he'll come back. He'll obviously deepen that lineup even more, right? Because no matter whether or not he's 100% healthy or not, you know, he's going to have great plate appearances. A guy with a high on base percentage, and they got a deep bench, Sarah. Like when you look at the complementary pieces on that team, you could see, you know, Brian Goodwin, Lamb, good backup catchers. Like you could see that team finding a way. And Andrew Vaughn, who's had a, you know, really good rookie year, being a great complementary player, a lot of choices for Tony La Russa.
Definitely. And I love that you mentioned Andrew Vaughn, because I mean, he was the guy who, when Eloy got hurt, were like, okay, I guess he's going to play left field. He was not an outfielder. He's a first baseman who was not going to play first base when they drafted him because of Jose Abreu. And he's played all of these different positions. He's been in different positions in the outfield for them. He's made good catches. You know, he's not going to be the best defensive outfielder that they or any team has, but he hasn't cost them games out there, and he's been good. He's had a good bat. And I think that, I mean, it's just incredible. You know, he was drafted last year, and the fact that they have that depth, as you said, is part of what's made them so good. I mean, even a guy like Sebby Zavala, okay, he's playing because Grandal is hurt. He became the first player in MLB history to hit his first three career home runs in the same game. I mean, that's probably more of a fluke than anything else, but the fact that they're having those types of performances from guys up and down the lineup card, that's the type of thing we see from a championship team, is just having that last guy on the lineup, the last guy on the bench, do something incredible like that.
And it does feel like that we're going to go into September, and a lot of the other American League contenders are going to be fighting for their lives. You know, Houston's lead over Oakland is two games. We got the, you know, the scrum in the American League East, with the way that's developing. Everyone's going to be playing, you know, hard down the stretch. And meanwhile, Tony La Russa, with that great rotation, is going to be able to rest everybody. You know, Liam Hendricks, you want an extra day? Okay, we're good. Craig Kimbrell, you want an extra day? Good. Lance Lynn, you want to skip a start? That's fine. There's no pressure on that team. I don't know. As we sit here today, I look at them. I don't know if they're necessarily the best team. I don't know if I'm ready to say that. But they may be, as we sit here today, the most likely team to win the World Series in the field, because of how everything has come together and because they're going to be able to rest guys down the stretch. What do you think?
I would totally believe it. I mean, I was saying yesterday to somebody, I would love to see them against the Dodgers or the Giants in the World Series. I would love to see the depth of all of those teams all together. And those are teams that really don't take off at bats and just are really, really good 1 through 9, and everybody else sitting on the bench. So I would love to see it. I mean, the Astros are really good. The Astros had a bad week last week, but I don't know. I think it is the White Sox right now. I think I could say that.
All right. I wanted to ask you about Mets owner Steve Cohen. We know that the team faces mountainous challenges between the injuries they have and the schedule coming up. But Steve Cohen's becoming a really important part of the conversation around the Mets, because he increasingly is becoming a presence with the Mets, tweeting out about the team, you know, being in the clubhouse, tweeting about that. I don't know exactly who is making all the decisions leading up to trade deadline, but I think his social media presence and some of the decisions they made sort of hint at a larger role. If I had to guess, I think he's involved in the decisions more than we know at this point. I'm curious about, you know, you as a Mets fan, tell me what you'd like to see in your owner. And I ask that question because, you know, I covered the Yankees for years. I covered George Steinbrenner, who was as involved as any owner has ever been back in the 80s. Then he backed off a little bit. And then when they started winning championships again in 1996, he wasn't involved as much publicly. Behind the scenes, he would still put, you know, executives in the penalty box. He would yell at people. Sometimes he would be responsible for making trades or making deals, like when he signed David Wells with a deal on the back of a napkin. Tell me how much you want to see the owner of your favorite team involved.
You know, it's a fascinating question. And I think that Steve Cohen is a really fascinating individual, because we've never seen someone do something like this before. Because as you're saying, I mean, you know, George Steinbrenner, that was not in the years of social media. You know, right. We did not have this type of access. So there are just very few owners, I think, in any sports that we have this type of access to. Or maybe it's not really two-way access, but who puts himself out there in that type of way, beyond in press conferences, beyond at the end of the season, the beginning of the year, and a couple times throughout the year. So it's really interesting to me, just because it is so new. I mean, I think ultimately, I'm not sure that it matters very much. I think ultimately all that matters is what happens on the field. And, you know, I think that if it is hinting towards some larger involvement, I think that that's probably something that Mets fans would be glad about, given maybe how the ownership tenure of their previous owners went. But, you know, I think that I don't know. Sometimes I see these tweets and I'm like, I don't know if we needed that necessarily. Just generally, I think it sometimes invites some ire, whether from fans or from fans of other teams who are like, well, and then you lost that game. You know, they're, you're always putting yourself out there when you tweet anything, as we both know, of course. But I do think it's just interesting. I mean, I'm so curious if there will be more owners like this down the road. You know, 10 years from now, will more owners have Twitter accounts or whatever social media we're using at that point? I mean, it's an interesting way to interact with fans. And I mean, there have been games this year where the rainout was announced on his Twitter account. I can remember at least one game like that where he said, we're not playing tonight. And then the press release landed 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, not anything significant, but it's just a whole different vehicle towards interacting with those fans.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he, you know, if they don't make the playoffs, you know, and the criticism comes down, if his perspective changes. You remember when Brody Van Wagenen was the general manager, he raised a lot of eyebrows among his peers because he was active on social media. You know, his tweets reflected a confidence that they were going to have everything work out. And then they didn't work out. And a lot of his peers were sort of mocking him for that. And then Brody stopped doing it. And I do wonder, in the case of Steve, if we might see the same thing. As I mentioned, you know, George Steinbrenner loved the attention when he became the Yankees owner. And then over time, I think he developed some scar tissue. Like, I think he stopped liking that. And he stopped liking the criticism. I know that because I've heard stories about how Gene Michael, Brian Cashman, when they disagreed with him about moves, where George would call and say, I want you to trade for this player, or I want you to make a deal for that player. And the response of either of Gene Michael or Brian Cashman was, that's fine, I'll do it. And then I'm going to tell the reporters it was your idea. And then he would back off.
Oh my goodness. You
know, so it may evolve with Steve as time goes on. I want to ask you, I did a piece for ESPN.com, and I don't know when it's going to run, sometime later this week, I think, about the looming budget issue that the Angels have with Shohei Ohtani, who is, I think you would agree with me, he's a runaway favorite at this point to win the American League MVP. Everything he's doing is unprecedented, and the contractual situation ahead is unprecedented as well. You know, I talked to one evaluator this week about, okay, Ohtani's eligible for arbitration after 2022 and then free agency in 2023. And if you're the Angels, you're going to want to get ahead of that. Right? Because you know he's going to be expensive and there's nobody else like him in the world. And I asked this one executive, okay, Ohtani is a free agent at age 29. What would he make? And this executive's estimate was 5 years, $250 million. Okay, $50 million a year. Here's where it gets really complicated for the Angels, Sarah. They already have a $37 million a year obligation for Mike Trout through like the next decade. Through 2029 and through 2026, they owe Anthony Rendon, their third baseman, $38 million a year. So that potentially, if this evaluator's number is close to what Ohtani's going to make, that's $120, $125 million for three players for a franchise, which has never had a payroll over $181 million. You need to put together depth and a pitching staff with about $55 million or say, let's say they grow their payroll to $200 million. It's going to be an incredible challenge for them.
Yeah. And, you know, that's, of course, as you said, all offensive players, right? And we've been waiting for this team to sign a big pitching free agent for years. I mean, since the whole time that Mike Trout has been there, pretty much, and that pretty much takes them out of the running for anybody like that. But it's a really interesting situation because I'm not sure if people remember that Ohtani came over as an international free agent. So because of his age, he was not able to be posted the way we might remember with other players who came over from Japan where there's a huge posting fee and then they get a huge contract, and Masahiro Tanaka, whoever else you want to pick. He was only posted for $20 million, which is not very much compared to what some of those other posting fees have been. And he was actually signed to a minor league deal. This is a minor league deal, as you referred to, with arbitration, everything else. That's why he's going through that, even though we haven't seen other Japanese players do this. And that's because of his age. If he had waited 2 years, he could have gotten a massive deal. And at the time, I remember the reporting really indicating how much he wanted to come here, that he was willing to forego that to come here and show what he could do and then go to free agency like all of these other players. So I just wanted to mention that because it's just a testament to how much Ohtani loves the game and wanted to be here. And that's why the Angels are in this predicament. I mean, if he had waited those 2 years and they had still signed him, they would already have him on the books. So that would already be part of their calculus. But I have no idea what they're going to do because you absolutely cannot let Shohei Ohtani walk. I mean, I can't even imagine from this point Shohei Ohtani ever playing a game in another uniform. This is the first player like this in baseball history. We are so far past Babe Ruth at this point. You cannot let that player end up on the Yankees, the Mets, whoever. Whoever you want to pick, the Giants, whatever teams might be willing to spend that money. So it's really, really interesting. And, you know, the arbitration case, I mean, we know that arbitration is very much based on past history of players. This closer had this many saves and you had this many saves, so on and so forth. No one has done this. So I don't even know. I mean, I would not want to be the lawyer on either side of that because I have no idea how you even begin to approach it.
No, I mean, how do you know, build an arbitration case? One agent said, I would love to take that case and talk to him about it because you might ask for $40 or $50 million, you know, because who's going to say that he's not worth that? Of course he is. When you talk about his production this year, he certainly has been worth it. I read recent speculation where the some reporters were suggesting, well, the Angels this winter go after Scherzer, go up. They can't do that. No. They have this huge problem on their horizon. And it is a problem because you're right about Ohtani. You can't imagine him going to another organization. He must be having a blast with the Angels. He picked them for a reason. He doesn't have to be the guy who's getting a bunch of knuckleheads like me following him around all the time. You can't imagine Mike Trout playing in another uniform. He's got a full no trade clause. He's going to finish his career probably regarded as the greatest player ever. And Anthony Rendon has a full no trade clause. So if you're thinking you're going to dump that contract on some other team, forget it. And I've talked to friends of his say, no, he's really happy. And we know Anthony Rendon, he's very comfortable. And so at some point, you're going to have to try to build a pitching staff with relative pennies, which I think gives more context to the Angels drafting 20 pitchers in 20 rounds of their draft. Like people wondering what that was about. This is what that's about. They have to develop a pipeline of cheap pitching.
Definitely. And I love that you make that connection because I think some people remember that. That was a pretty fun thing on Twitter during the draft of like, hey, they drafted another pitcher and another one and another one. But, you know, we know how long it can take, especially for pitchers from the draft to get to the majors and how, you know, what are your odds with 20 guys who you drafted necessarily all making it or even a handful of them making it. So they really need to rely on that. And I assume we'll see them trying to be active in the trade market as certain pitchers get to the point where maybe they would be either talking about extensions or else, you know, being eligible for agency. I mean, I'm thinking of like Walker Buehler in like 3 years. Like, are they going to be in the trade market for someone like him? But it's not great to be sitting here right now and thinking about the best player in baseball, one of the best players, probably the best player in baseball history, as you said, the most exciting player in baseball, Anthony Rendon, also a great player, and thinking how on earth are they going to make the playoffs even 3 years from now with the fact that they're not going to be able to go out and sign, like you said, a Max Scherzer or any other high-priced free agent pitcher.
All right, Sarah. Great to talk with you. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
Jessica Mendoza is an analyst for ESPN. She was doing the game last night, the White Sox and the Twins. The White Sox absolutely rolling at this point. And Jess, first off, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. I'm trying to adjust from coming back to the mainland from Tokyo. So I'm trying to not wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning like it's normal.
I remember when I went to Japan and I came back and it took me like a month to not wake up in the middle.
Don't tell me that. No.
That's okay though. You got two boys who are going to make sure that they get your sleep schedule back on track. Okay.
That is exactly the best, honestly, like jet lag solution. Have two young boys that want to wrestle all day long and there's no chance of sleeping. And then you're so exhausted by the end of the day, you do sleep through the night.
So we'll talk about the White Sox today. I'm angry about the Orioles and the way their season's playing out, but I want to talk about this, what happened in the game that we saw the other day between the Marlins and the Colorado Rockies. The Rockies made the announcement that they determined that the fan who yelled out actually yelled out Dinger, trying to call to the Rockies team mascot. Lewis Brinson, who was in the on-deck circle when that happened, listened to the video, and he spoke with reporters yesterday. Give a listen to what he had to say.
Watched it a lot, especially when I heard that, he said Dinger instead of the N-word. I personally, this is, again, my personal opinion, I personally keep hearing the N-word. It's not that I want to hear it. I'd never want to hear that word. Personally, I've never been called that in person to my face on the baseball field, outside the baseball field ever.
Jess, I watched the video, saw the gesture of the fan. I think he said Dinger. But, in listening to Lewis Brinson yesterday, who was just so open, in speaking with reporters, and you could see in his face, he was earnest and he was trying to figure out, how exactly to handle this moment. I thought, this is a classic example of, growing up white as I did, or being African-American in the shoes of Lewis Brinson, because I've never wondered in my lifetime, if someone's going to yell something like that at me. I've never had that. And I feel like it's so awful that his life experience puts him in a place where he's sitting and watching the video 50 times, as he said, and wondering what was said. I feel bad that he's sitting there answering questions about it.
Yeah. And, it continued in that interview too, is him apologizing, even to the fan. If he's like, if he said Dinger and I misunderstood him, he's like, I apologize that he's received any sort of backlash. And he was so genuine and honestly looked beat up. Like, here he is in the dog days of August and the season, and just racially having to respond to something that really, he heard one thing that definitely, absolutely 100% bothered him. And then now this is being analyzed and articulated, like, with, just pinpoint, this is what happened, this is what it was. And every day he's going to the ballpark having to answer questions about something that he does not want to do.
Yeah. And I've never had to do that. Like, I can empathize with him, try to, but I've never been in that position. And Jess, I learned so much about all that. I got to say, from my little sister, Amelia, Amelia Lincoln, who had leukemia in 2010, was diagnosed on New Year's Eve. And over the next 3 years, I learned so much about, trying to get in somebody else's shoes, because she would tell me stories about how people would walk up to her and say, and her form of leukemia, thank goodness, the doctors at Dartmouth and at Mass General, have saved her life. She's doing great now. But there were two or three times when, we wondered if she was going to make it, you know, by through the end of a month. And there would be times when people would walk up to her and say to her, "Hey, I know what you're going through. You know, my mom had that, or my cousin had that." And it bothered because they couldn't relate to it. They couldn't relate to the fact that she is, you know, staring her mortality in the face. They couldn't really relate to exactly what she was experiencing and knowing that she wasn't going to be able to have kids. All the life-changing things that happened during this time, that to me was such a valuable time. And so that's what I thought of last night when I, you know, listened to Lewis Brinson, like, God, I can't imagine being in that position where something is yelled out and you're even having those thoughts, because I never have.
Well, and I think honestly, Buster, just I think living in a time where hate seems to be so much at the forefront of more of what people are saying and feeling now more than, I mean, I can't directly relate to Lewis Brinson in exactly those words, but definitely in hearing more hatred now than ever. It's I think there's a reason why he's hearing what he's hearing, and it's the time. It's because those words and that hatred is so profound now more than ever. And not that that word hasn't been used over and over for way too long anyway, but I do feel like we are living in a time where this is something that is, whether you hear it or not, it's there. And it's there, and it's stronger than it ever has been. And whether that word was directly said to him or not, the fact is that negativity, that hatred is so much a part of our society right now. And it's sad, because as much as you want to go out and play the game of baseball or just go out and live your life, there's so much hatred, Buster. And that's something I know I've personally felt that just shocks me, because that people would even go about their day trying to target and look out at other people in a hateful way, to where you get defensive and you start to hear and feel it, even sometimes if it's not there.
Boy, I just, you know, just watching his interview just felt terrible for him, that, as they say, that he's sitting there, you know, feeling a need to watch a video that many times to wonder what was being said and have to answer questions about it. There's no way to transition into baseball stuff, but I'll try to do it. I was talking with Sarah Langs before about the White Sox, Jess. I really feel like this is a team that, while, you know, a lot of other teams were wondering if they can overcome injuries and whether or not they can overcome roster problems, it feels like the White Sox are coming together as we get closer to October. What do you see?
Yeah, Luis Robert making his return. And I mean, it was just a stupid game because of the stupidness of just their offense. And you saw it on Sunday Night Baseball against the Cubs with the three home runs in the first inning. It almost felt like a repeat automatically. Anderson leading off with the home run, Eloy Jimenez hitting two home runs in that game, Yoan Moncada joining the party as well. And again, like I mentioned, Luis Robert just adding even more. He had a couple knocks as well in that game. But my biggest thing is, you start to think about, I mean, this team's in the postseason, like, now, right? So how are they going to fare in October is how you start to kind of evaluate them, because their division is way down and they're just going to continue to dominate like they did last night. And I just look at the how smart they were to take a bullpen that was already really good, Buster, but understand what wins in October, because at the end of the day, it's not having superstars all the time hitting home runs. It's more about your bullpen and the back end of innings and how you are going to be able to shut down an offense at the end of a game when you do grab that lead. And that's where you've seen so much success in the history of the postseason for our game, especially these last 5-6 years. And the White Sox go out and get Craig Kimbrell and Ryan Tepera, and they've already got Liam Hendricks and their bullpen. I mean, even watching Garrett Crochet, who is just ridiculous. I mean, he's like a Chris Sale times 10. It brought me back to old Chris Sale with the White Sox. And I mean, what he can do and what he can throw. And he's probably their like sixth guy right now out of the bullpen, because there's so many great arms. And as much as we talk about their star power, even their starters, the offense, it's the bullpen to me that's really going to allow this White Sox team to make a significant run in October.
And I mentioned, I want to talk about the Orioles, because I was looking at where they stand this morning. I think they're going to wind up having an integral role in determining who makes the playoffs, because the Blue Jays play them 10 times. We know that's going to get really ugly, because the Blue Jays have this great offense and the Orioles are losing games as they have over the last 4 years at an unprecedented rate. They're on a pace to lose 106 games this season. And their previous two full seasons in 2018, 2019, they lost 115 and 108 games. That is unprecedented. Just there, it looks like that their run differential for the last three full seasons by the end of this year will be somewhere around minus 770. That's going to be one of the worst ever for any franchise over the course of three full seasons. And it makes me angry because I feel like when you see what they've done, that it's all part of a larger plan to tank. We talked about this with teams in the past. You know, it was successful for the Houston Astros. You know, Chicago Cubs did it. It's not successful. It hasn't been successful for the Philadelphia Phillies, who did it for, you know, a number of years. I just think it's wrong. I hate the idea that the Orioles won't at least try to be competitive in a way that we see the, you know, Oakland year after year is competitive. Tampa Bay is competitive. The Royals, Dayton Moore, I've had conversations with him. He hates tanking. And so to see the Orioles, because you can't, I think, Jess, you would agree with me. You go into a season, you can reasonably expect you're going to win 54, you're going to lose 54, because that's the nature of baseball. And then, you know, where you finish is going to depend on what you do with the other 54. The idea that you lose this much and by such a significant margin on a regular basis, that's because the team is designed to fail. And if that's not the reason, Jess, then what you're telling me is that the current leadership has put together teams that are historically bad. Okay, it can only be one of the two. Either you're tanking or you put together teams that are historically bad. I find it offensive. What do you think?
Well, it is offensive, and it's awful for the game, especially because it's not just Baltimore. I mean, you'll see other teams as, you know, we continue, if this continues, that will try that same, you know, philosophy of trying to get high draft picks. And if, you know, that's tanking, especially if Baltimore ends up winning 4 or 5 years from now, then it becomes this blueprint that's continued after the Houston run, after Chicago's run. But my biggest thing, Buster, is how do you change it? I mean, how do you make change? I mean, this next year, I feel like, is a pivotal time where baseball needs to change their rules and be able to make it where this is not okay. It's not okay, but now it's not allowed, where it's prevented, where there is some sort of different incentive for teams to still be competitive down the stretch, even if, I mean, look at the Minnesota Twins. I mean, that's a team that has sold off everybody, but they're still trying to work on things. They're trying to build. They want to get the morale like as positive as possible. Talking to Rocco Baldelli yesterday, I mean, yeah, the easier thing to do could be, let's just lose as many games as possible. We'll get more guys next year and the year after that if we continue to do this until we're good. But it's so awful for the game. And when I look at Baltimore, especially, Buster, I mean, there's so many like great Baltimore fans. Like, I love like traveling. I mean, you're like this too, where you travel all over and I'm always asking, okay, who's your team? Like when someone's like, hey, I love watching Major League, you know, I'm like, all right, who's your team? When I hear from an Orioles fan, it's just, there's something so pure but then so sad about they can't even watch their team. They can't even turn it on. And I get it. Because it's one thing if they're losing and they're not, you know, going to be in the postseason, but at least they're competing, right? At least on a day in and day out basis. If you're a Baltimore fan, you hate the Yankees. So then when they're playing the Yankees, there might be a couple wins that you scratch out and you feel good about your team because they're trying on that given day to win. But when you know they're not, you can't watch because you don't want to see them lose against all the teams you hate, especially the ones in the division.
Yeah, and I share a similar affection for Orioles fans. I covered the Orioles for 2 years for the Baltimore Sun. You know, loved working Camden Yards. Still my favorite ballpark. To me, all you have to do is look at the Oakland Athletics. You know, since Billy Beane took over as head of baseball operations there 25 years ago, Jess, they never lost 100 games. Not one time. And I've had that conversation with Billy in the past where he just raged at the idea of tanking. He was offended by the idea of designing a team to fail. And you can't lose this many games unless you're completely incompetent or you intend to lose that many games to pick at the top of the draft. It's offensive. Taylor, you get the last word as the Orioles fan.
Buster, you tweeted about this morning. I've read probably every reply and quote tweet. I cannot understand these Orioles fans who are defending ownership and the team and saying, oh, they're not tanking because they're not setting up lawn chairs in the field. Like, the Orioles made a decision not to pay for a major league pitching staff. Like, that's a thing they decided to do, and to say their hands are tied from the Chris Davis contract. The ownership is cheap. They're cheap. Chris Tillman was their best pitcher on good teams for years. If that doesn't tell you everything you need to know, then I don't know what you're watching or reading or whatever. But Buster's right, everyone. Get off his back.
And Jessa.
Get it, Taylor. Get it. Yeah, you just wound that up, Buster. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, we see teams, small market teams all across baseball. You know, they might have down years. You might have years where you do, you know, you stink and you pick at the top of the draft. But to be this bad to this degree, it's offensive. And you can understand why the Player Association is going to talk about non-competitive behaviors this winter and probably hold up the Orioles as a prime example. All right, Jess, sorry, I'm getting off my soapbox.
Like your soapbox. Taylor's got one too. This is awesome.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Tuesday. And before we start with the Bleacher Tweets, I want to remind you about ESPN's newest podcast, Black History Always. It's a new podcast in partnership with The Undefeated that takes a deep dive into the stories of now and tomorrow from a Black aperture that will empower and inspire. Hosted by our pal Clinton Yates, rate, review, and follow Black History Always wherever you get your podcasts. And we mentioned it yesterday, ESPN Plus subscribers, they can join an ESPN Plus Fantasy Football League right now for a chance to win $250,000. This sweepstake is only for those folks in the U.S., 18 or older, no purchase necessary. Visit ESPN.com/ESPN Plus football rules for full details and official rules. Let's go to the tweets here. Blue Jay Josh at Josh Steh, he writes in, which do you think it's more likely, the Dodgers catching the Giants or the Reds catching the Brewers for their division titles? I like this question.
Well, if you're only giving me those two options, I'm going to say the Dodgers catching the Reds, because the Dodgers have a lot of good players, you know, and they just have started this sequence with having Trey Turner to go along with Corey Seager and to go along with Mookie Betts and Max Muncy. So you do wonder if that depth will manifest. I don't think the Reds are catching the Brewers for the National League Central title. I do think the Reds have a chance to catch the Padres for the wild card.
All right. Andrew Campbell writes in, real Camp Drew. And Andrew's question is kind of poorly timed because the Yankees bullpen completely, they got the win, but melted down in the ninth inning there. But I'm going to summarize. He sent us a screenshot of a note. Andrew wants to know if the Yankees work with relief pitchers, turning them around, coaching guys up, is akin to the Rays work with position players, turning around underperforming prospects into good major league players.
Yeah, good call. Look, they've certainly in recent years, they've done a good job of that. And we've talked about, you know, teams like the Rays and the Brewers being able to do that. But, you know, the Dodgers have been excellent at that. Guys like Chris Taylor, Max Muncy, taking players' skills and helping them get the best out of themselves. And you're right, the Yankees have been doing that with relief pitchers.
Let's go to Mike Hubbard at MHub513. Another ill-timed question, but Mike writes in, what would Luis Castillo have to do to win the Cy Young? 1.9 ERA since June 1st.
Yeah, I think Zach Wheeler at this point is the leader. What would you say, Taylor? I think he's got a pretty good leg up at this point.
Absolutely. Last one for today, JR Amico at Jason Amico. Our friend Jason writes in, what's the word of Evan Longoria returning from injury? His collision with Brandon Crawford was seemingly devastating at the time and was interesting because it happened between two multi-time Gold Glove winners. How good will the Giants' bats be once he returns?
Well, first off, he is making progress. I checked on this morning. He went 3-for-3 last night with a home run, started two double plays in the field in his rehabilitation assignment in AAA. Look, I thought the trade for Chris Bryant was excellent, because if Longoria has any type of a setback, and given his age, you know, you have to build in for that, plan for that possibility. Bryant could play third base or he could move around. They're an excellent team. I think it was, you know, Dave Schoenfield said it right yesterday. The Giants aren't coming back to the pack. There's an excellent chance the Giants are going to finish the 2021 season with the best record in baseball, not something that any of us talked about a possibility of before the year started.
Certainly not. All right. Good batch of Bleacher Tweets there. Please continue writing in hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, to Jess, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.